good evening, everyone. This is Lou Blanchard. I should say Lou Cavalier. I'm using my old name from one of my ancestors. One of my ancestors back a couple generations. My grandmother's maiden name was Blanchard, and I adopted that when we first came on the air, Elizabeth and I, a good many years ago now. But, of course, my real name is Lou Cavalier. Actually, if you want to be fancy, it's James Luther Cavalier. So I'm using my middle name on the air most of the time. So what do we got tonight for the Divided Kingdom? Well, we'll lead off with a little article from the Associated Press by Jamie Stengel. This is a couple weeks old now, but I wanted to make some comments on it, so I thought it was still worth reporting. And the title says, Trump says his administration is set to release JFK files with no redactions. Well, they have been released now, and whether they have any redactions at all, I honestly don't know. But this was, as I said, dateline March 18th. So what are we, about 3 weeks from that point now, or close to it? Dateline Dallas. President Donald Trump says files related to the 1963 assassination of President John F. Kennedy will be released Tuesday without any redactions, making good on a promise he made during his campaign. Trump told reporters Monday that his administration will be releasing 80,000 files, though it's not clear how many of those are among the millions of pages of records that have already been made public. Quote, we have a tremendous amount of paper. You've got a lot of reading, Trump said while at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington. He also said he doesn't believe anything will be redacted from the files. Quote, I said, just don't redact. You can't redact, he said. And this is Lou interjecting. I'm not sure whether that totally came true or not. I haven't followed up on that completely. But going on with the article, many who have studied what's been released so far by the government say the public shouldn't anticipate any earth-shattering revelations from the new released documents. But there is still intense interest in details related to the assassination and the events surrounding it. Here are some things to know. First, Trump's order. Shortly after he was sworn into office, Trump ordered the release of the remaining classified files related to the assassination, which has spawned, meaning the assassination itself, has spawned countless conspiracy theories. All right, let me interject right now. Let me get on my soapbox here. One of our kind listeners, who I was so glad to hear from, I haven't heard from him in a long time. He has a very witty style, and he was saying, did I mean to imply that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone in killing Kennedy? No. I did not mean to imply that. I may have been quoting from some article and ran out of time. That's quite possible. No, as you'll see as we go through this, and today I'm just going to give you a few highlights, nothing in depth, but there will come a time someday, perhaps, as I said last week, perhaps around the time of the anniversary of Kennedy's assassination in November, I'll probably devote an entire program to it. But I wanted to mention this little zinger here that they have. It has spawned countless conspiracy theories. That's the thing that the mainstream press always likes to use when they want to knock down something, when they want to belittle any kind of theory, any kind of hypothesis. They will say, it's a conspiracy theory. And I might note the Associated Press was the author of this, and the Associated Press from day one was the source of a good deal of erroneous information. In fact, William Manchester, in his book, The Death of a President, which, by the way, is a good book if you want to get a good overview of the events surrounding the assassination, the president's trip, the actual killing, if you don't go into it too deeply, and then the subsequent events, the leading up to the state funeral. It's good for that if you just want an overview, but you cannot really go by a lot of the forensic details he gives. He gives nothing but the... I'm knocking stuff over here. He gives nothing but the government's version. Lee Harvey Oswald, he says, acted alone without help. Well, I don't believe that for 1 minute. But going on now, and I was just going to say the Associated Press, even Manchester says the Associated Press was the source of disinformation, of inaccurate information, not necessarily deliberate, but just grasping at straws, you might say. I think it was the Associated Press at one point said Lyndon Johnson had been wounded, or was having a heart attack, or a Secret Service man had been killed, none of which was true. So you have to take some of this with a grain of salt. But reading on, he, meaning President Trump, directed the National Intelligence Director and the Attorney General to develop a plan to release the records. The order also aimed to declassify the remaining federal records related to the 1968 assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy. And if any of you are younger and are not as familiar with that, he was the younger brother of John F. Kennedy, President John F. Kennedy. And also the records pertaining to the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. After signing the order, Trump handed the pen to an aide and directed that it be given to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Trump administration's top health official. He's the nephew of John F. Kennedy and the son of Robert F. Kennedy. The younger Kennedy, whose anti-vaccine activism has alienated him from much of the family, has said he isn't convinced that a lone gunman is solely responsible for his uncle's assassination. Okay, next subdivision, November 22nd, 1963. When Air Force One, carrying JFK and First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy, touched down in Dallas, they were greeted by a clear sky and enthusiastic crowds. With a re-election campaign on the horizon the next year, they went to Texas for a political fence-mending trip. But as the motorcade was finishing the parade route downtown, shots rang out from the Texas School Book Depository building. All right, another little zinger. Let me interrupt again. To this day, many reputable authors and researchers feel that possibly no shots came from the depository, and possibly shots came from up ahead. Almost certainly, shots came from up ahead at the so-called grass, originating at the so-called grassy knoll. Many authors think that the shots behind were from one of the other tall buildings overlooking Dealey Plaza, and that the shots did not come from the Texas School Book Depository. There were some witnesses that claimed that they saw a gun sticking out there, so we'll have to give them that, and it could be true. And then that sentence continues, or that paragraph continues. Police arrested 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald, who had positioned himself from a sniper's perch on the sixth floor. To this day, there is no evidence whatsoever that Oswald was on the sixth floor at the time of the shooting. The only possible evidence was from one man, Howard Leslie Brennan. I may have his name backward there. Might be Leslie Howard Brennan, who was on the ground in front of the depository. And there are conflicting versions of what he saw and when he said he saw it. On the night of the assassination, he claimed he could not identify who was in that window. So, there again. This is a quick job that I don't think that the author of this really took the time to go into it in depth. And then 2 days later, nightclub owner Jack Ruby fatally shot Oswald during a jail transfer. That's true enough. A year after the assassination, the Warren Commission, which President Lyndon B. Johnson established to investigate, concluded that Oswald acted alone and that there was no evidence of a conspiracy. But that didn't quell a web of alternative theories over the decades. All right, that sounds reasonable. Now, next section, the JFK files. In the early 1990s, the federal government mandated that all assassination-related documents be housed in a single collection in the National Archives and Records Administration. And I'll just add that that has a personal note of interest for me because it's located not downtown Washington, where the main National Archives building is, but about 10 miles out in College Park, Maryland, near where I went to grad school for 3 years. So it has kind of a personal note there. And the collection of 5 million pages of records was required to be opened by 2017, barring any exemptions designated by the president. Trump, who took office for the first time in 2017, had said that he would allow the release of all of the remaining records, but ended up holding back some because of what he called the potential harm to national security. And this is Lou again speaking. Probably more likely the potential embarrassment of the CIA and other government, FBI and so forth, other government agencies that had stymied the original investigation and interfered with a lot of the investigation over the decades. But Trump ended up holding some back because of what he called the potential harm to national security. And while files continued to be released during President Joe Biden's administration, some remain unseen. Researchers have estimated that 3,000 files or so haven't been released either in whole or in part. Now, remember, this was before this very recent release, so this is looking forward to that. And last month, reading again from the article, the FBI said that it had discovered, oh, they didn't know they were there, about 2,400 new records related to the assassination. The agency said then that it was working to transfer the records to the National Archives to be included in the declassification process. So, Lou, again, don't you wonder how many other records remain to be discovered? Going on, there are still some documents in the JFK collection that researchers don't believe the president will be able to release. About 500 documents, including tax returns, weren't subject to the 2017 disclosure requirement. And what's been learned? Some of the documents already released have offered details on the way intelligence services operated at the time, including CIA cables and memos discussing visits by Oswald to the Soviet and Cuban embassies during a trip to Mexico City just weeks before the assassination. The former Marine had previously defected to the Soviet Union before returning home to Texas. Well, there isn't time. This is Lou again. There isn't time to go into all of this. There are some that doubt that he even went to Mexico City, Oswald, that is. And certainly the only photograph that the CIA claims they got is of a heavyset man who obviously is not Lee Harvey Oswald. This is in the Mexico City. And conveniently, the cameras were supposed to have shut off, I think, on Saturdays. Do you really think the CIA stops its work on Saturdays? I don't. Anyway, I won't read the rest of this. You can read it if you want, but there's only a couple more paragraphs left. So, and if he was in Mexico City, does that have any bearing on the hard evidence of his guilt or innocence in the crime? I don't think so. Anyway, just if you'd like to look at this in more detail, it's an AP article entitled "Trump Says His Administration is Set to Release JFK Files with No Redactions" by Jamie Stengel, S-T-E-N-G-L-E, and dated March 18th, 2025. All right, on a whole different topic. Now we'll switch over to another whole kind of crime from Lifesite News. The title reads, "Gang Rape, Forced Abortion, Revenge Porn, Lenient Sentences Expose Ongoing Civilization Collapse." And the subtitle says, "The horrific story of a 12-year-old Austrian schoolgirl's serial abuse at the hands of migrants and the lack of justice in similar cases show the serious risks that women and girls face from predators in Europe." This was by Jonathan Van Maren, again from Lifesite News, Thursday, April 3rd, 2025. In her explosive book, Prey, P-R-E-Y, Immigration, Islam, and the Erosion of Women's Rights, Ayan Hirsi Ali, I better spell that name for you, A-Y-A-A-N-H-I-R-S-I-A-L-I, I guess you would say it, Ayan Hirsi Ali, who has since converted to Christianity, said the unsalable. The mass migration of military-age men to Europe, she wrote, was threatening the physical safety of women and girls across the continent. To prove her case, she filled page after page with gut-wrenching examples of women and girls who found themselves prey in their own countries. Since Prey was published, Ali's thesis has been borne out in the headlines over and over again. From the rediscovery of the Rotherham rape gangs to individual assault cases. Most recently is a story that has horrified even the journalists who covered it, that of a 12-year-old Austrian schoolgirl referred to by local media as Mia, M-I-A, Mia, who was, quote, passed around like a trophy by more than a dozen boys, unquote. The boys were migrants, and some of them filmed their crimes against her. The initial police investigation, which began last March, involved 17 young men and the young girl who was allegedly abused in various locations across Vienna, in garages, in the apartments of the perpetrators, and elsewhere. According to GB News, those suspected include Austrian, Turkish, Syrian, Italian, Bulgarian, and Serbian nationals. A senior source from the city's state criminal police force revealed that 12 suspects were between the ages of 14 and 18, while another was aged 19. Two more were younger than 14, which is the age of criminal responsibility in Austria, while the identities of two others are currently unknown. The victim's Afghan boyfriend, 18, has become the first of the lot to be convicted in the tragic case, who was 15 when the gang rape incident occurred in a hostel in the capital. The Afghan, referred to as WAIS, Waste S, pleaded partially guilty because he claimed, quote, I thought if she was 12 and I was 15, it was allowed, unquote. But Waste piled crime upon crime. When the child got pregnant, she was taken to get an abortion. After the baby was aborted, he had sex with her and then blackmailed her with the footage. According to GB News, quote, an expert analyst studied the defendant's phone and had come across a social media post on the TikTok account called Exposing Vienna, which shares content about, quote, public shaming and revenge porn, unquote. The expert said, quote, the defendant wrote, she gangbanged 15 guys, post videos, do you want videos? Ha 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 ha. Some of the other suspects similarly claimed that the victim had, quote, pretended to be older than 14, unquote, and that the intercourse with the 12-year-old was consensual. As GB News noted, these defenses have worked in other cases. Quote, last October, a 16-year-old Syrian appeared in court for rape and blackmail charges. If he had been found guilty, the defendant would have had 5 years in prison. However, he was acquitted of the rape charges after he insisted that he did not know the girl's real age, adding that she looked older, unquote. As others have already pointed out, the state of justice in Europe is stark evidence of decline. United Kingdom Judge Tracy Lloyd Clark, for example, sentenced military veteran Daffron Williams, who suffers from PTSD due to his service in Iraq and Afghanistan, to 2 years in prison for Facebook comments he made after three little girls were stabbed to death at a Taylor Swift dance party in Southport. That same judge let child abuser Reese Newman, convicted of the rape of a child under the age of 14, off. Let him off because of, quote, prison overcrowding, unquote. The story of the Austrian schoolgirl is a microcosm of The story of the Austrian schoolgirl is a microcosm of civilizational collapse. The serial abuse of a child by migrants, the legal abortion of a baby to hide the crime, the use of revenge porn as blackmail, and finally, the ludicrously lenient sentences handed down to the criminals. Then the final insult, judge sentenced the 18-year-old to a mere 15 months probation and £670 in damages for raping a 12-year-old and blackmailing her with revenge porn after an abortion. Once again, a very hard-hitting article from LifeSite News by Jonathan Van Maren, M-A-R-E-N, Thursday, April 3rd, 2025. Gang rape, forced abortion, revenge porn, etc. Well, what's happening back here in this country is often happens. One of our devoted listeners sends me some things about my old home state. He knows that I grew up until the age of 21 in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts has gone to pot. I don't know about literally, but it certainly has in the figurative sense. So he sent me a number of good articles. I wish I had time to read them all to you, but I'll read you some of the highlights of three of the best ones, well, at least the most hard-hitting ones. This first one actually came from the New York Post, March 25th, 2025, and the title, I'm not sure whether this is the entire title, it just says, After Child Rapist, Migrants Set Free. I kind of suspect there might be a little more to it. Oh, you know what? Opposite the picture that goes with this, it says Feds Mass, meaning Massachusetts, deport raids. You could read that Mass two ways. It could be Massachusetts or Mass deportation. And if you read that first, it kind of makes sense. Feds Mass deport raids after child rapist migrants set free. This is by Jenny Taer, T-A-E-R. The defiant sanctuary state of Massachusetts recently dumped several illegal migrants accused of raping kids back into the community while refusing to hold them for ICE. And the Trump administration is now targeting the area for mass deportation raids. Since 2017, controversial state policies have barred Massachusetts authorities from holding illegal migrant accused criminals in local jails solely based on ICE detainers. The situation prompted President Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, to set his sights on the region. He announced Monday that federal immigration agents conducted a raid there last week that resulted in the arrest of 270 illegal migrants, most of whom he described as, quote, significant criminals, unquote. There are several recent disturbing examples of alleged migrant rapists being freed on extremely low bail set by Massachusetts courts, according to CBS News. This is Lou again. Now, I wouldn't call CBS News a right-wing organization by any stretch of the imagination, but at least they had the common sense to report this on the news. Going on, once the suspects make bail, local cops can hold the alleged sickos on just the illegal immigration status. So unless ICE agents get to the jail fast, the accused criminals are set free. Worcester County Sheriff Louis Evangelides decried the state's flawed process. He said, quote, It's very frustrating for me to know I might have a drug trafficker or a violent offender getting bailed out of here, and I call ICE, and they're like, quote, We're busy with a couple of situations. We can't get there for a few hours, unquote. I can't hold them, Evangelides said. Evangelides jail in the past 6 months has held two inmates charged with child rape who were given measly $500 bail amounts. Most people would not think that's an appropriate bail, Evangelides said. Well, that, again, this is Lou, that is a vast understatement. If it was maybe $50,000 bail, maybe. A couple hundred thousand, yeah, I could agree with that. But ICE has had some success in tracking down the suspects. In February, the agency arrested Guatemalan citizen Jose Fernando Perez, 49, and I believe it's his picture that appears in the paper. Yes, Jose Fernando Perez, 49, in Framingham, Mass., which is about 30 miles, I guess, due west of Boston. They arrested him on immigration wraps. He had been previously charged with 3 counts of raping a child by force and released more than 2 years earlier after posting his $7,500 bail amount. I sought to hunt down Guatemalan national Stevenson Omar Perez Atzalan, 19, in January. It's unclear when he was charged with aggravated child rape and released on a $7,500 bond amount with a GPS monitor. That same month, I also called Honduran national Juan Alberto Rodesno Marin, who was charged with indecent assault and battery on a person above the age of 14, and assault to rape and released without bail on a GPS monitor in December, according to CBS. Evangelita said his jail has recently seen a massive increase in requested ICE detainers. Quote, "We've seen the detainers triple in the last 3 years. We were in the 30s a couple of years ago. We exceeded 100 in 2024, the sheriff said. He went on to say, "To me, that means there are more people illegally in the Commonwealth committing crimes." Holman last month said he counted, quote, 9 child rapists that were in jail in Massachusetts and released before being apprehended by ICE on illegal immigration wraps. All of the group of 270 illegal migrants rounded up in the area last week, there were 6, quote, foreign fugitives, including 4 who were wanted for murder or to serve a criminal sentence for murder, along with drug traffickers, child sex predators, and numerous other violent public safety threats, Tom Holman said in an ex post Monday. Holman took swipes at both Massachusetts Governor Mara Healey and Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, saying they, quote, should be ashamed of supporting sanctuary policies, unquote, for allowing illegal migrant, for allowing illegal migrant-accused criminals back out onto the streets to continue allegedly terrorizing the community. He went on to say they would rather release these animals back into the community instead of honoring ICE detainers or notifying ICE when they are scheduled to be released, Holman wrote. And he also said releasing public safety threats back into the public rather than working with ICE at the jails puts the public at great risk, he said. And I can certainly agree with him there, and I think those of you listening would also agree. Well, we pretty well covered this next one, so I'll just give a few of the highlights. And by the way, that was from the New York Post. The date was March 25th. And reading the whole title, I think it reads, "Feds mass deport raids after child rapist migrants set free." And then this one was from the Boston Herald, Monday, March 31st. Who says Massachusetts is a sanctuary state? And the subtitle, "After 370 immigration arrests last week, Governor Healey may be playing word games with the feds." And Massachusetts is not a sanctuary state. It just acts like one. It's instead a sort of haven or heaven for immigrants, illegal or otherwise, who have flocked here seeking refuge and welfare. Just don't call it a sanctuary state. Well, this is a good article. Unfortunately, it just isn't time to read it all. One interesting thing. Skipping down a little bit, the court held that the state court officers are not legally permitted to arrest or hold immigrants wanted by ICE on detainers. The ruling is interpreted to apply to all state and local law enforcement officials as well. If that does not make Massachusetts a sanctuary state, then perhaps the loose interpretation or outright ignoring by the Healey administration of the state's so-called right to shelter law does. And it goes on to describe this 1983 law, which, of course, was never intended for its present application. It was written at a time when there were very few immigrants. And it was just meant to deal with a homeless problem, it says here. And this was Act 1983, Chapter 45, Section 1, passed to deal with the state's homeless problem, which back then was small compared to today. The law, signed by Governor Michael Dukakis, limited the eligibility for welfare benefits only to, quote, residents, unquote, of the state. It says that any such person who enters the Commonwealth solely for the purpose of obtaining benefits under this chapter shall not, I repeat, not be considered a resident. But, of course, this is Lou speaking now, just summarizing. All of these illegal immigrants are being classified as residents, so the left-wingers can put them under this law, can apply this law to them. So, that's what's happening up in my old home state. I never thought I'd come to see the day when it would be ruled by these far-left bureaucrats, politicians, whatever term you want to give to them. Now, here's a little more humorous thing from the Boston Herald, Friday, March 28th, different topic. Tesla tortures demented Dems. And if you haven't heard about it, some of these far left wingers have been setting Teslas on fire in protest. But let me just read a little of this. They're not making arsonists like they used to. This is, by the way, by Howie Carr, frequent columnist in the Boston Herald. I mentioned this undeniable fact on the eve of the worldwide Tesla takedown tomorrow. And again, this was the 28th, Friday the 28th, so the date he's talking about would have been the 29th of March. And it says, I mentioned this undeniable fact on the eve of the worldwide Tesla takedown tomorrow to protest Elon Musk's campaign against waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal budget. Apparently, this is very triggering to Democrats, the party of waste, fraud, and abuse, as long as it's going to them, and most of it is. Over the last few weeks across the nation, lunatics have been warming up for tomorrow's day of rage by vandalizing and torching both individual Teslas and the dealerships where they are sold and serviced. They say crime doesn't pay, and it certainly hasn't thus far for the Tesla torturers. As much as we all condemn their actions, the shiftless Democrat hippies apparently need to be reminded of some simple rules involving a successful arson. Reconnoiter the area to make sure there are no working security cameras. Make sure the fire catches before you flee the scene. Be sure to take all containers of accelerant with you when you flee the premises. Above all, do not, repeat, do not, set yourself on fire as you are trying to protest. Whatever. This is basic stuff, arson 101. Anyone who ever watched, say, Goodfellas knows all this. But again, the perps here are Democrats. They are not sending us their best, even to the Tesla lots. All the above rules have been violated in recent weeks. These Kamala voters are even getting caught when they're keying the Teslas. And keying, I assume, means what it did when I was younger, taking a key and scratching, you know, defacing the paint of the car by scratching it with the sharp end of a key. And going on, they never did their homework in public school, so why would they do the slightest research before getting into the arson racket? It took me 3 seconds to find this one on AI yesterday. So this is a quote. Yes, all Tesla vehicles manufactured after 2017 have cameras for security features, unquote. But job one is not setting yourself on fire. Just ask Daniel Clark Pounder, a 24-year-old hobo from South Carolina who scrawled the traditional bleep Trump and love live the Ukraine on 3 Tesla charging stations before tossing Molotov cocktails at them. The suspect, police reported, accidentally caught their own back on fire while throwing the devices. This is why a professional torch is always accompanied on a job by a blanket man, If the worst happens, the blanket man is there to put the fire out. But I'm guessing that any guy in South Carolina with a hyphenated last name probably doesn't have any friends, let alone one willing to act as his trusted blanket man. Most of those arrested as Tesla terrorists have one thing in common, as the Daily Caller noted, she or they pronouns. In Colorado, one Lucy Grace Nelson, nay, Justin Thomas Nelson, was charged with throwing the usual incendiary devices and scrawling the customary graffiti. Nelson preferred to spray paint, bleep musk. The New York Post found Nelson's father and asked him about his son or daughter. Quote, he changed his name to Lucy a few years ago, unquote, Dad told the newspaper. He's in his early 40s, but he's been living with his mother, who has been taking care of him. He has emotional problems. He hasn't been able to keep a job. Sounds like a good Democrat to me. On social media, he calls himself Baby. Next is Erin White from suburban Chicago. She uses she, they pronouns. When she vandalized the Tesla Center, she slimed both Trump and Musk, in addition to supporting trans rights. Do you detect a pattern here? Of course, it's very bad behavior, but this kind of insanity is less harmful than these Democrats murdering little children at some Christian school or randomly assaulting MAGA college students in Dallas, which happened just this week. Back in the 70s, the city of Boston had rent control. It was a disaster. It always is. Now, I'm going to skip down. Our time is passing, so let me just skip down to a couple of closing paragraphs here. In New Hampshire last weekend at the Mount Washington Resort, a middle-aged guy was videotaping keying by one of the truck's five security cameras. I should say videotaped keying. He was wearing orange pants, violating yet another ironclad rule when committing this sort of mischief. When perpetrating a senseless street crime, wear nondescript clothing. And don't do it in broad daylight, which Mr. Orange Pants did. The story even made the Daily Mail in the UK. All right, so those are some of the highlights of what's going on in various parts of the country. Now we're going to switch gears to a more serious topic. Not that that's not serious, if it's your car. But from the New York Post, Miranda Devine, new FBI chat logs reveal extraordinary gag order. Oh, and I should give the source. That humorous article I just read was by Howie Carr, C-A-R-R, from the Boston Herald, Friday, March 28th, 2025. The title was Tesla Tortures Demented Dems, T-O-R-C-H-E-R-S. And now, Miranda Devine, new FBI chat logs reveal extraordinary gag order senior leadership used to shut down any Hunter Biden laptop discussion. And as we said, it's by Miranda Devine, New York Post, April 2nd, 2025. New chat logs released by the House Judiciary Committee this week show the extraordinary lengths the FBI went to behind the scenes to shut down any discussion of Hunter Biden's laptop in October 2020 after the New York Post broke the story. The conversations withheld by the FBI under Director Chris Wray show that senior leadership issued an internal gag order on the laptop. The FBI had been in possession of the abandoned MacBook Pro for 10 months by that stage, after computer repair shop owner John Paul Mac Isaac handed it over and warned of the potential crimes and national security concerns he had found. The FBI's forensic analyst quickly determined the laptop belonged to Hunter, had not been tampered with or altered in any way, and was suitable to be used in court. Sure enough, 4 years later, evidence on the laptop was cited in tax fraud charges to which Joe Biden's son pleaded guilty, and the device was displayed to the Delaware judge that found Hunter guilty of gun felonies. Yet, the chat logs show that the senior FBI officials instructed agents to say, no comment. when asked about the laptop during regular meetings with social media companies before the 2020 election. The FBI had spent weeks warning Facebook and Twitter about election interference in the form of Russian disinformation, and had told Twitter to be on guard for a, quote, hack and leak, unquote, operation likely, and that's in quotes, the word likely, involving Hunter Biden. In other words, the FBI pre-bunked the Post story so that the social media companies immediately censored it. And this is Lou speaking. Or to say it another way, they tipped off the social media so that the social media would think it was exactly what they said all along, Russian disinformation. Back to the article, the FBI knew the Post had received a hard drive copy of the laptop from Donald Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, because it had a covert surveillance warrant on the former mayor's iCloud. On October 14, 2020, the morning the story was published, an FBI analyst confirmed to Twitter that the laptop was real, but his bosses then admonished him, and that word admonished is in quotes, and lamented in one message that he won't shut up. Another message shows that an FBI attorney slapped a gag order, and that's in quotes, a gag order on any discussion of the laptop. Please do not discuss Biden matter, the lawyer tells one FBI employee whose name is redacted. The attorney from the FBI's Office of Counsel is believed to have worked under former FBI General Counsel James Baker, who was conveniently parachuted into Twitter 6 months before the election. According to the Twitter files, Baker played a crucial role in censoring the Post. FBI agent Elvis Chan, at one point in the chat, asked a colleague, quote, actually, what kind of case is the laptop thing? Corruption? Campaign financing? Unquote. The response is, close hold. Oh, crap, says Chan. Okay, it ends here. Need to talk, replies the attorney. And then the name is redacted, messed up. We cannot comment. And it goes on with some other evidence, but I see our time is fast passing, so I'll just kind of skip down a little bit. If you want, I'll get this source again in case you want to look at this in more detail. So kind of summing it up, the deliberate silence of FBI senior managers allowed the false narrative to take hold that the laptop was Russian disinformation and helped presidential candidate Joe Biden shake off evidence in his son's laptop that Joe had lied during the campaign when he repeatedly insisted he knew nothing about Hunter's overseas business dealings. That lie over the years of his presidency evolved into he was not involved in Hunter's business deals. And then he did not profit. The FBI cover-up was not the only undeserved gift the addled and corrupt former VP received to help him to win the presidency from Trump and even run for a second term at age 81. The same Washington press corps that ignored the laptop also turned a blind eye to Joe Biden's obvious cognitive deficiencies, benignly accepted his unusual unavailability, and actively helped the White House hide his decline. It said nothing when this newspaper was frozen out, and that would be the New York Post, by the way. It said nothing when this newspaper was frozen out and accused of peddling, quote, cheap fakes, unquote, for truthfully reporting on Joe Biden's state for 4 years. Now the White House press is laughingly giving itself awards for its, quote, aggressive reporting, unquote, on Joe Biden's descent into senility. Reporters who showed zero curiosity about the state of the president's brain are cashing in by writing tell-all books on the scandal. One of the upcoming books, Fight Inside the Wildest Battle for the White House, recounts a donor's reception hosted by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy in June 2024 when Biden needed fluorescent tape stuck to the carpet to show him where to walk. Joe also spoke, quote, halt, anyway, unquote, and needed a teleprompter for what were supposed to be unscripted remarks. The book reveals that the White House took, quote, extensive steps to cover up the signs of Biden's aging and contingency planning if Biden chose to step aside or even died in office, The Hill reported. At the G7 summit in Italy, before his disastrous debate performance, a makeup artist was employed to, quote, cover up the physical signs of Biden's aging. Biden consistently made these makeup appointments, but he sometimes canceled the briefings that were to follow, unquote. In another book, Unshattered, Ron Klain, a longtime Biden aide, is reported saying that Biden was, quote, out of it, unquote, during debate prep, and seemed to think he was president of NATO. A few weeks later, Klain lied to CNN. He said, quote, the idea that somehow people weren't transparent about the state of his health and the state of his acuity, I think is belied by the fact that the president does events all the time, unquote. A lot of people lied about Biden, although never quite as much as Biden lied about himself. Now the media pretend it really didn't matter, that it's just a quirk of history to be gossiped about. But you only have to read the latest leaked accounts of how close we were to nuclear Armageddon in the Ukraine war to see how dangerous the cover-up was. A demented commander-in-chief flirting with World War III was a story that needed to be told, but instead leftist propaganda media pretended that Honest Joe was sharp as a tack and would never pardon Hunter. Once again, that's from the New York Post by Miranda Devine, April 2nd, 2025. And the title was Miranda Devine, New FBI Chat Logs Reveal Extraordinary Gag Order, etc. Then we have a little short article from the People's Voice. Been in a lot of controversy over in France. Marine Le Pen vows to fight New World Order after presidential ban. This was, again, from the People's Voice, April 2nd, 2025, by Sean Edel Tabatabai. I'm always a little uncertain about how to pronounce his name, so I apologize if I don't get it quite right. Marine Le Pen has pledged to wage war against a New World Order she claims orchestrated her ban from France's presidential race, vowing to defy a Paris court ruling issued on Monday, March 31st. The National Rally leader denounced the decision as a blatant disenfranchisement of millions of voters, casting it as a strike by global elites against French sovereignty. In her first public statement since the verdict, Le Pen refused to bow out of politics, instead rallying her supporters with a fiery rebuke. Quote, let's be clear. I have been excluded, but in reality, it is millions of French people whose voices have been silenced, she declared. She framed the ban, rooted in prior legal battles, as proof of a coordinated effort by powerful forces to suppress her anti-establishment movement. The ruling has only deepened Le Pen's resolve, turning a personal setback into a broader call to arms for her base. By invoking the New World Order, she taps into long-standing conspiracy narratives, accusing the judiciary of serving an international agenda over the will of the people. As France grapples with this political flashpoint, Le Pen's next steps could reshape the nation's right-wing landscape. Le Pen was found guilty of embezzlement and banned from running an election for 5 years, with the ruling taking immediate effect. In an interview with the French television channel, TF1, Le Pen slammed the verdict, calling it a political decision and claiming that the rule of law had been, quote, completely violated. And she said, quote, millions of French citizens are outraged. In France, the country of human rights, judges are enforcing the laws of an authoritarian regime. Le Pen said, calling it a, quote, tragic day for our democracy. Well, we have just under 5 minutes left, so let me give you a few headlines. Brother Bruce of American Prophecy was kind enough to send some of these to us, and we have a couple of his comments, if time permits, to add to them. First, millions of bees have died this year, and what may be worse bee loss in recorded history. And I didn't do what I said. That previous article I just read about Marine Le Pen was from the People's Voice, April 2nd. And Marine Le Pen vows to fight New World Order, etc. So millions of bees have died this year. And a devastating blow to the U.S. And this is from End Times. Make that endtimeheadlines.org. And a devastating blow to the U.S. beekeeping industry. Millions of bees have died over the past 8 months, prompting experts to label this as potentially the worst bee loss in recorded history. The alarming scale of these deaths has raised urgent concerns about the future of pollination and food production, with beekeepers and scientists scrambling to understand the causes behind this unprecedented crisis. Blake Shook, S-H-O-O-K, Shook, a prominent U.S. beekeeper, has been at the forefront of sounding the alarm. In an interview with CBS News, March 29, 2025, Shook described the situation as an unfolding disaster for the industry. Once again, this is from endtimeheadlines.org. The date was March 31st, 2025, and the title, Millions of Bees Have Died This Year. Then we have, from the peoplesvoice.tv, March 28th, EU issues dire warning to 450 million citizens, stockpile supplies and prepare for World War III. This is March. Actually, the article itself appeared on March 27th. It was by Bakhtin Dimitri. The European Union is teetering on the edge of a precipice, and its leaders know it. On Wednesday, the EU Commission issued a chilling directive. Every citizen must stockpile food, water, and essential supplies to survive at least 72 hours of total disruption. This isn't a drill. It's a grim acknowledgement that war and chaos are no longer distant threats but the looming certainties. The 18-page manifesto, cloaked as a, quote, preparedness strategy, unquote, reads less like a precaution and more like a battle plan for a continent bracing for impact. And we have time for one or two more. Next one, Step Walking into a Cashless Society. This is by Jared Dillian. The source was Reason.com, and the date was March 25th, 2025. Philip Lane, chief economist of the European Central Bank, recently expressed urgency for the need to develop a digital euro, also known as a central bank digital currency, or CBDC, to compete against stable coins such as Tether, and electronic payment systems developed by U.S. tech firms such as Google Pay and Apple Pay. Not content with eliminating cash, now the goal of central banks is to eliminate any competing electronic payment system. We're sleepwalking into a world with digital currencies without any government coercion whatsoever. As a 51-year-old Generation Xer, I carry lots of cash in my wallet. I teach personal finance at the local university and recently asked a class of about 30 students if any of them had any cash. Not one of them had a single bill or coin on them. They used debit cards, credit cards, Venmo, and Apple Pay. As it turns out, cash usage among the 18 to 24-year age cohort has declined from 28% to 13% over the last 5 years. Most like the convenience, that is, most of the students like the convenience of the electronic payments, even though studies show that people spend 12% to 18% more when using credit cards than cash. If the government does attempt to implement a digital dollar, there will be a little resistance to it. And Brother Bruce added his comment at the bottom, Mark of the Beast system will be gladly accepted by most people. Then we have a little short one here. Probably got just about enough time for this. Maybe a little more time. WHO, monkeypox, the side effect of COVID mRNA vaccines. I keep forgetting to give the source of the preceding one. The source for that one about the cash, or lack of cash, was Reason.com, March 25th, 2025. And then we have the WHO says monkeypox is a side effect of COVID mRNA vaccines by Frank Bergman, March 30th. And this was from SlateNews.com. The World Health Organization, WHO, has admitted that so-called monkeypox is actually a side effect of the COVID mRNA vaccines. The United Nations Health buried the admission on the WHO's, I believe that's DigiAccess website. The website contains a database that lists all known side effects of all drugs and vaccines that have been approved for public use. Under potential side effects for the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, the WHO lists monkeypox, smallpox, and cowpox among hundreds of other disorders. They are listed under infections and They are listed under infections and infestations that emerge as, quote, side effects, unquote, of the Pfizer mRNA vaccine. And then, another headline, Japan issues alert as deadly kidney failure surges in COVID-vaxxed. This is also by Frank Bergman on April 1st, 2025. The preceding one, by the way, was by Frank Bergman, SlateNews.com. And just to give a quick sentence or two, Japan has just issued a warning that some of the country's top scientists uncovered direct links between COVID mRNA vaccines, vaccines in quotes, and surges in deadly kidney failure. And it goes on to give the description of the disease, and at least one of the main doctors who has talked about that in Japan. Again, SlateNews.com. April 1st, Japan issues alert as deadly kidney failure surges. Well, our time has run out for the day and for the week. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to go to our website, it's DividedKingdomRadio.com. If you want to write to me, it's Luke Haverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week. Good night.